Well, good day, boys and girls, moms and dads, and children of all ages. Yes, indeed, it's another Fish and Frank's Robert RJ extravaganza of whatever it is. I'm not sure what it is, but Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and of course, RJ in command and control center. You know, we love doing this. We absolutely love doing the radio show. Don't you love doing the radio show?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you were so enthusiastic. Yeah.
This is Robert.
I really like it.
Oh, he likes it.
I don't use that word very often because it's used so loosely, so I'm not a big fan of just using it to use it.
I was kind of trying to do a segue.
Okay.
Trying to lead into something.
All right, here. Let me pick up the stick. I love doing this radio station.
And we have love bugs abounding.
Oh, my God.
So you can tell. They are connected at the back end. They fly in pairs. They're black with a little red dot on them. And when they're all black, they're actually not love bugs. Those are swamp mosquitoes. We do have...
Oh, wait a minute.
We have two different species of bugs that swarm like that.
Wow.
One are the blind swamp mosquitoes. That's the only name I've ever known them by. But they're all black. They're a little bit smaller, a little different shaped, but very similar. But they, people always say, oh, these love bugs are so thick. But right now we have love bugs.
Okay.
Now, the myth, the rumor, the conspiracy theory is that love bugs were created by the University of Florida as a way to eat mosquitoes, and it backfired on them. And another one is that they were brought in and dumped here. The reason I'm going about love bugs is there, when you go out in a boat, let's go back a number of years ago, but there was actually a freak occurrence with the wind, and the wind started blowing out of the east during a major love bug, you know, hatch. And all of a sudden, all the bugs from, like, DeSoto County and the ones on the other side of that were all being pushed to the west coast of Florida. I actually saw the radar of this, and it looked like a massive storm front coming in. It literally covered all of Charlotte County, part of Lee County. It was the Doppler radar picked up the bugs, and you could just see it being pushed across. And Terry and I happened to be on the water that day. And, oh, my God, we tried going at speed, but you would be hit, they'd be hitting your face and your mouth. It was disgusting. We ended up coming back at dead slow idle, and the boat literally had about a half inch of love bugs in it. It was just, and that's kind of what led me into this. But the truth of the matter is they were imported here, but not the way people think. Love bugs came in from Central America on the bumper of cars. People, when they started driving down to Mexico and countries south of there, as they were driving back up, they would go through a swarm of love bugs, and they'd get stuck to the grill and the bumper of the car, and when they'd stop for gas, some would fall off. Now, love bugs actually are attracted to carbon dioxide, you know, the like what comes out of the exhaust pipe of a car and what we expel. They're attracted to that. So they tend to swarm over roads because that's where they want to be. But they do have a benefit because the love bugs on the side of the road help break down the grass. They eat dead grass and turn it into basically new soil.
Yeah.
So they are horrific. And for the last couple of days, we've been seeing tons of love bugs. Now, the reason I bring this up is because of all the myths, rumors, and legends. And they can be a real pain in the butt when you're out fishing. I mean, they can swarm over you, and it can be a real nightmare, especially on a boat. My best advice is to slow down and go as slow as you can. Or try and spot an area that doesn't have them, hit the throttle and get over there. But you're not going to stop them, and they stick to everything.
Yeah, and they give you kind of the heebie-jeebies and just that annoyance thing while you're out there, because when they don't, you know, they're not going to bite you or anything like that. But
they're just nasty.
Them crawling around your hair or
your face or crawling up your shorts. Yeah, okay. But literally, over many, many years, the love bugs would get stuck to some bumpers, go right to the side of the road, start eating the grass, you know, what do you call it, Robert?
Composting.
Composting it. And then they would swarm up and get stuck to more bumpers. And little by little, over a few decades, they were brought to Florida inadvertently on the bumpers of cars.
Wow.
So that's how love bugs got here. Now, they are very detrimental to your paint job, your windshield. My best advice is we actually spray our cars with like an oil or over wax the front of your car, and especially get that Rain-X for your windshield, because once they stick, I mean, you're using an ice scraper to get them off, and I mean, it's nasty. They're like made out of the guts or some kind of glue, and it gets hard.
Glue and acid combined.
Yeah, though, but over wax the front of the car, get that Rain-X windshield wax they put on to keep the rain off. That'll help them slide off of the windshield when they get hit. But you can be going down the road, and in less than a mile or so, literally have so many love bugs on your windshield you can't see anymore. And the windshield wipers aren't going to help.
Nope.
So
I have a love bug joke.
Okay.
My girlfriend and I were driving down the back roads, and I said to her, hey, let's pull over and do like the love bugs do. And she said, okay. So we get up on the hood of the car, and she smashed my face against the windshield.
Okay.
Nice.
Now, from now on, we are going to preview RJ's jokes. Do we have an editor anywhere?
Yeah, we should have had that on 10-second delay.
Huh? Yeah, we need a delay here. All right. And other things are the weird. Some dolphins were attacking.
Yeah. You know, Captain Carl was out this morning getting some bait before his charter for going tarpon fishing, and watched dolphins thrashing around and kind of got closer. And best to his observation is they were actually attacking a shark.
Now, two things dolphins will attack when they have babies, and those had babies there, young, yeah. Small dolphins. Male dolphins will be attacked, and sharks will be attacked. Anything that's a possible predator to their babies, because male dolphins have a peculiarity, which I'm not going to get into right now, but when you see a lone dolphin hanging out somewhere, it's pretty much a male, and it was run off of, what do they call it, pod of dolphin? There's a name for it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember, but there's a name for a school of dolphin. But what happens is you're going to see every once in a while, especially this time of year when the babies are coming on, you'll see a group of dolphins with some babies in the middle, and then outside of that, there's a big ring of dolphins. And those are the males. And people think that the males are out there in a protective form. That's not true at all.
No.
They are out there so that they cannot get to the young females. So the males are kept at a distance until the young females get to be a certain size and weight, and then they're allowed to come back in. If one of those males comes in and gets with the younger female, often it's fatal because they can drown them while they're doing their thing. So if a male would do that, the females will run him off and not allow him back in with the group of dolphins.
Right.
And the two dolphins that were attacking the shark this morning were absolutely females. The males really are not that protective, I would guess. I don't know. They will be protective, but usually it's the females that will go after the sharks. And let's face it, I mean, see a female duck when something threatens their ducklings. I mean, all of a sudden they get big and bad, and a goose will run you off, you know. So it's not uncommon. alligators, bears, human females. Go ahead. Go after their kids. See what you get.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was probably two females, and I would say most likely they were attacking a shark, but it is possible they were attacking a male.
Yeah, it still would have been really neat just to see. You know, those dolphins have been out there quite a bit behind the house, you know, and everyone's always seen them, like, in their wake of their boat and have that moment. I had never had that moment until a couple months ago.
Really?
Yeah. When we were going out to take the boat out for a little bit, they were swimming, playing right in the wake, and I never got to see that before. So
one of the things
cool.
I tend to do, if they're in the area, I'll trim the motor up a bit so it's going to push the nose of the boat up and the back down. And then I bump the throttle a little bit so I can get a real strong wake because it lowers the back of the boat into the water, produces. Right. But you're still going slow so they can actually surf the wakes real nice. They enjoy that surfing.
Yeah, that's what I did. I started to play with the tilt and trim on it and the jack plate a little bit to try to get it to build a little bigger wake.
Yeah, jack plate all the way down, trim back almost until you start blowing water. And then bump it up to, you know, just... So you're probably going to be going along about 8 to 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it really creates a very deep wake, but it's nice. It's fun for them because of the rolling motion.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. It was cool to see. I'd never got to witness that before.
One of the barges I had that I built, I had these two sponson outriggers on it, and they were very flat on the front, and they caused a big rolling wake off the front of there when we, you know, tried to push it. And the dolphins would just gather up on that thing and just play with them. So, anyway, Spanish mackerel, what's going on?
The Spanish mackerel have been doing decent. There's a lot of, you know, borderline legal, you know, 12 to 14-inch fish right inside the harbor from Cape Hayes out through Boca Grande Pass. But once you hit Boca Grande Pass and start working your way offshore, there's definitely a little bit better quality fish. Those are running up there in that 15 to 20-inch range. You know, and they're on all the near shore reefs. There's a lot of different varieties of bait fish out there offshore right now, and inshore for that matter. So when we were out there the other day, we got into a handful of Spanish mackerel while we were trying to play with sharks. So, you know, it was an added little fun bycatch while waiting for that shark to come along and feed. And we were right there just below Cape Hayes. So,
well, I had a thought. Legal. FWC is, I think it's just social media pressure, because I do not believe they're listening to any of their biologists, their scientists. I really don't. They just came out with snook, redfish, and trout are catch and release only for the next year, until next May.
Until next May?
And we have more snook than I've ever seen. You know, they're everywhere, all over the place. Possibly I could see them doing it to the redfish, except redfish don't live here. They only grow up here. So I'm not sure what good that's going to do to the redfish population, but it might. With the sea trout, we've actually seen the sea trout declining over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So, and the only thing they did right, in my opinion, was the sea trout. And they closed it to commercial as well.
Yeah.
So no recreational, no commercial take of sea trout for a year. That could actually be a good thing. As far as the snook and redfish go, I think that's a warm and fuzzy bunny. Oh, look at me, I'm doing a great job. And because they were appointed to that by their cousin or their uncle, and they got appointed to the position, I don't think most of them are smart enough to be where they're at. I think they're... There should be a mandatory something in order to be on the FWC board, not just appointed because you're so-and-so's brother-in-law.
Right.
I mean...
No, I agree with that 100%, but I mean, it's like...
Listen to the biologists.
Listen to the biologists and use common sense science, too. Just open your eyes and pay attention. Don't just sit in a cubicle or in your little weird office and...
People picked on them on social media. Oh, poor babies.
Yeah.
bunch of whiny little babies. They, you know, social media pressure is ruling the world.
Well, it's almost as if they feel like they have to do something, anything, instead of just leaving it alone. You know, maybe the status quo is what it should be. But but they're always changing. Probably the most complicated fishing laws in the country have to be Florida, don't you think?
Some of them. We're in the upper end of really stupid laws. The one thing about it is if you're running FWC, you should not be allowed to be brain dead and a social media pansy. You should literally listen to the biologist, and I would love if, you know, one of the biologists, snook people, the redfish people, whatever, but as far as I know, there was no major change to the populations. And the problem with that last red tide, it was our first social media red tide. It wasn't one, the most catastrophic. We've seen way worse than that. But there was no social media to provide pressure. And there's Twitter gangs and the Facebook groups. And everybody's kind of got away from reality. And emotional opinion rules the day. And I just don't think that should be the case.
Well, and I think that there should be fact-based decision-making. So you make a decision like, right, so we're going to close three species of fish for a year. We as the public want to know why. And so where is the fact-based information? Where are the biologist reports? You know, where are the census reports? What are other scientists saying? How did you arrive at that decision? That's what we want to know, because then we'll stop bugging you about it if you give us the data.
I won't call you a pansy if you put out a report saying this is what we had, this is what we've got. And they have the figures, but they won't allow anybody to look at it.
And I don't understand why that is. Why can we not see the survey information, the biologist reports, things like that? That one really bothers me.
But have you noticed it's that way all the way through the government, from D.C. all the way down to the FWC?
Well, and that leads me to believe that we're making decisions that are politically and economically motivated.
It's not economic, because that's a detriment. Charter boat captains are going to lose business. Hotels, restaurants, people will just decide that they can go other places besides Southwest Florida. You know, we hope they don't. We love you. Please come down here. You know, we want you to visit. We want you to come and stay for the winter. We love our tourists and our snowbirds. But I just think this is a bad economic decision. And I would love to see, as you pointed out, RJ, that is what we all want. Show us the figures. Tell us why you did this, not just, I'm a pansy and I can't take the social media pressure. I don't like people mad at me.
And that's a scary thing. If they're making decisions based on social media pressure, we don't know if they are or they aren't, but it sure does look that way.
It has that full appearance.
That's not how you run a department that's based on science.
It's not based on science.
Well,
FWC should be based on science.
Right.
But they're not. It's whoever complains the loudest.
Well, and I'm sure that it comes from the top down, that our state representatives and state senators are getting pressure, so they turn around and say to FWC, we need you to do something, and they're like, well, we don't need to do anything. No, we need you to do something, so they close three species of fish for a year.
Yeah, it's
and they're also the most popular species of fish.
The ones people want to come here and catch,
yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with a snook dinner. It's healthy, and I would much rather see you go out, catch a snook, clean it, not waste anything. Because when you buy fish, 15 pounds of marine life has to die for you to get, you know, your stuff at a restaurant or a fish market. You're not your hands may be clean, but your insides are dirty. If you catch the fish yourself, you get the meat, you put the carcass in for food for the other stuff, your hands may be a little dirty, but your insides are much cleaner. That's my belief. I don't want to waste anything. I don't want to have to, you know, just because I got to get my hands dirty to make the world a better place should not be a problem.
Well, and then there's also the issue of catch and release. How effective is it? How many fish are going to survive being caught, especially by somebody who's not experienced in doing it? You know, they pick the fish up by the jaw and they break the jaw, throw the fish back in the water, hold it out for too long. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things.
I would say the number one thing, number one way people kill fish is they handle them with a dry hand,
yes,
or a dry rag or a dry glove. You're there fishing. You should have a bait bucket there, probably. Put your hand in the bait bucket, get it wet before you grab a fish. Make sure your rags are wet, your gloves are wet. If you have, if your hand is covered in slime when you release that fish, 50-50 it's going to live at best. It'll get sores and actually die pretty slow to death. You were better off just killing them and filleting them out, much more kind to the fish.
Well, yeah, and I see that too, that if you're allowing catch and release, a certain percentage of those fish are now wasted because they're not going to survive the process of being caught and released, especially if you don't know what you're doing.
All right.
And my recommendation is you need a Boca grip or something like that so you don't have to put your hand on the fish.
Well, if you use a Boca grip, the best idea is to have the Boga grip on the jaw, wet your other hand, and use it to support the fish properly. And the Boga grip gives you nice control over the fish. You don't drop it. Boga grips are awesome. If once the fish hits, I would say about 8-10 pounds, now you have enough weight there to start dislocating a jaw or breaking a jaw by using a Boga grip. And it's really important you support the belly. On a smaller fish, 5 pounds or whatever, the jaw is going to hold that weight of that fish with no problem. The Boga grip, holding them on a Boga grip is not a problem. You have to be realistic about what you do. 941-268-6460. Call, text me, not call. It's not set up for take phone calls. But if you, 941-268-6460, text us a question. The one question we have is there any white bait along the beaches?
On the beaches, it's scattered. There's a lot of small white bait, scaled sardines that are in 3 feet of water right off the beaches. But if you move out to that 10, 15 feet of water, now you're getting into some mixed thread fins, some Spanish sardines, and some regular white bait.
But most of the bait that I've seen along the beaches is literally in 6 inches, a foot, 2 foot of water. It's literally at the beach.
Right.
If you're out there in 10, 12, 14 feet of water, A, you're in a very hard time catching them. B, it's much more scattered. But you need to look right at the beach.
Yeah.
But
and the water's been very cloudy, too, lately. So that makes it even trickier to find it out there. I mean, on Sunday and Monday, visibility out on the beach on off of Boca and Gasparilla were, I don't know, maybe 2 foot of visibility.
Well, and the biggest thing is, as soon as white bait does show up, you have boat after boat after boat after boat hitting it with a cast net. It just doesn't last long.
Yeah. And I actually put that in perspective with a guy yesterday. I asked him how much white bait, because he's like, I don't catch very many. I said, okay, what did you get, 100? He said, maybe 200. I said, okay, so 200 times, let's say, 50 boats a day. So, what do you get? And he went, wow. And I'm like, okay. Now, take that 5 days in a row.
200 times 50, that gives us 10,000.
10,000.
Let's say times 300. There's 365 in days in a year, but let's say 300. Okay, 10,000 times 300. That's 3 million pieces of white bait taken a year, if you're guessing correctly.
Right. You know, that's...
It's only 3 million.
It's only 3 million.
That's just recreational, not including what the commercial guys take.
Yeah, right. They're probably taking 10 times that amount.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with commercial take of fish. People always think I'm anti-commercial fisherman. I am 100% not against commercial fishing. I am 100% against them getting more quota than the recreational fishermen. I think that's highly unfair. Recreational fishing generates $19 billion a year in Florida. commercial fishing generates like $3-3.5 billion a year. They pay the lobbyists better than we do. We generate many times more, 3.5 to 19 billion. That's the discrepancy. But they use part of their 3.5 billion to pay lobbyists to go to Tallahassee and get them good stuff. Yeah. And to D.C. You know, they're smarter than we are. They're joined together.
They're more organized for at least a couple days out of the whole year.
Yep. Okay, you went on a trip with Carl, Robert. What happened?
Well, I actually went on 2 days in a row with him. I got lucky. He had a charter cancel on him, so he called me up at the last minute, so I got to go Sunday and Monday with him. And to my normal form, I sucked.
No, I saw you with a couple of fish.
I got a triple tail and a couple small sharks, but as far as the intended targeted species, I didn't do very well.
Robert probably knows more about fishing than almost anybody alive, with the possible exception of one or two others. But when it comes to going out and going fishing, here we have theory versus reality.
Yes. Looks good on paper.
Robert can teach almost anybody how to go out and be one of the most successful, consistent fishermen in the world. But when he gets on a boat, it storms, it rains, it's blowing, the fish leave for Texas. I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you really got to work at it.
Or it's the weirdest things, you know. It's like, you know, I use single-strand piano wire for shark fishing, and I very rarely have it break on me. And with the exception of black tips when they jump. And I hooked one nice black tip, and it was the coolest. It was one of the coolest moments I've ever got to see, actually, with shark stuff. This one greyhounded right parallel on the boat.
Not, so shut up out of the water, doing like a dolphin would with a jump.
Yeah, 30 feet off to the side of the boat, and went, jumped, hit the water, jumped again while spinning, hit the water. And as soon as it hit the water, it jumped again, spinning. It did four of those in a row, but on the fourth jump, it actually did two complete corkscrews and hit the water and broke me off. But it was, you know, it was a solid 4 to 5 foot black tip, but it was amazing to watch it jump like that, because I've seen a lot of black tips jump. They'll jump once, they might jump twice, and they'll sometimes do a half a dozen corkscrews while they're in the air. I've seen that. But for this one to hit the water and jump like a mullet or like a bait fish is chasing it, while spinning at the same time, it was super, super.
Did he do any backflips while he was going?
No.
Just going straight out and spinning
forward,
in the air.
Nose first in. As soon as his nose hit the water, he was back out of the water again and hit the water right back out while doing a complete 360. It was cool. You know, so that was awesome to me. You know, and then
what were you using for bait?
Ladyfish.
Cut, whole, live?
Whole ladyfish. I took frozen ladyfish because we're...
So, you had frozen ladyfish.
That was my frozen bait for fresh bait insurance, which fresh bait didn't work out too well.
You know, it's one thing. You can actually really anger the gods by being arrogant enough to say, I'm going to go out and catch my own bait today. I'm not going to take anything with me.
No.
And that really upsets Poseidon sometimes. Yeah. And the best way to guarantee you're not going to see a single bait fish is to leave the dock without something.
Exactly.
But anyway, you had frozen ladyfish.
Frozen ladyfish.
Whole or halved?
I was using them whole.
So you had them whole. You didn't cut them up or anything, just whole?
Yep, just whole. Well,
free line?
I cut the tail off because we were drifting.
Okay.
And I didn't want them to spin on me too bad, so I cut the tail.
So you cut the fin part of the tail off.
Correct.
And did you cut into the meat at all?
One little slice.
Okay, so that helps. So once you cut into the meat, it makes a little better bait, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So chop the tail off, and you were just drifting, huh?
Yeah.
Now, we were free line sinkers, bobbers?
Free line on one, bobber on the other.
All right, how far below bobber?
6 feet.
Okay.
Because we were rigged up for both tarpon and for shark, but we were drifting around where all the bait fish were at and seeing some Spanish mackerel jumping and stuff like that, you know, and that was fun. You know, so we gave it a good time, but it was blowing fairly well that day, so it was a little tough. And then Monday went out tarpon fishing and went into the pass, and we were doing, first we ran the beaches looking for fish, which there was none, none to speak of, really. And then got into the pass where they were all over and cooperating. And we stuck three fish. One fish I had on for a good solid 5 minutes. And Carl sets his drag to hate.
Oh, yeah. I always, when I'm fishing with Carl, first thing I do is kind of pull on the line a little bit and back the drag down at least one or two turns.
Yeah.
You didn't know to do that.
No, I knew to do that, but I don't like screwing with this stuff too much. So
why?
It's
Carl. I love screwing with him.
Yeah. So, and plus, I still learn a lot. I'm constantly learning out there, so I want to see what it's going to do, and I understand why some of these reels get destroyed.
Yeah.
That's for
Carl's
sure.
A little tough on tackle. I've had Carl testing tackle, I think, from 5 different companies.
Yeah.
And he has systematically destroyed every reel I've ever given him, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because with Carl, if he can get 6 months out of it, a normal person will get 5-10 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But one of those fish, I had one fish pull the hook, literally just pulled it. Nothing happened, it just pulled. And then the third fish I was fighting for a good solid 5 minutes. And set the, once it jumped a few times, still set the hook just lightly because it was a circle hook, but still do that little short pumps, trying to make sure that hook is really driven in there. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, bink, nothing. Reel it up. Hook's perfectly fine. Leader's perfectly fine. Doesn't even look like I had a fish on it. Just pulled. And then Carl said, oh, you let the line go slack. I said, well, really? You had it on Facebook Live. Roll back the footage because I'm going to call. No way. I screw up. I will admit that. I absolutely screw up fishing. But I am 100% positive that I did not let slack in that line at that particular moment.
Yeah, Terry was watching while you had to fish out.
Yeah.
And she was so upset. He lost it. She was in the office just
really?
Oh, yeah. She was mad about that, boy. I can't believe he lost it. What was that?
Yeah.
And she got in a little late. All she saw was you pulling out the fish.
That's funny. I had no idea, but it was just funny because I know he does that Facebook Live, and he's like, you let slack in. I'm like, no, roll back the footage because I know that one. The other ones, maybe. But that one, I'm dead positive because it was bowed. He got a new fighting chair, and it was awesome.
How's the new chair?
Pretty awesome.
Okay. I know he went up to Tampa to get it.
It's actually a firefighter in, I think, Sarasota or Bradenton that builds them.
Okay.
And he does an amazing job with them.
And if you have questions about what's going on, 941-268-6460, you're welcome to text us questions. And speaking of which, about questions, we're back at Luigi's. This is May, right?
Yes.
Okay, we're into May. So you can call the store, reserve your seats. We did a polling, and after about 200 responses, we only had 2 of them that did not want reserve seating. So everybody else wanted reserve seating. They didn't want to show up and not have a chair. So I would have preferred no reserve. Because,
you were one of the 2.
Yeah, I was one of the... I was number 3 voting for no reserve because we have to write it all down, keep track of everything. It's a lot more work for the guys, me and the people at the store. But if you call 941-625-3888, 941-625-3888, we're only doing March 14th. There's only Tuesday night, May 14th, yes. This month, May 14th, you can still get some seats. We have a few left. That'll be at Luigi's, 6:30 to 8, Tuesday. But there will be no Wednesday this month, just the Tuesday. And go on fishinfranks.com, that's fishing with no G, Franks, and click the seminar icon, and it will tell you when other ones are coming up. Let's see, we talked about the FWC ruling, so no snook, trout, or redfish for the next year. You can catch and release only. When you go out for sharks, Robert, do you like using stingrays?
Not really. If I do, I prefer to use the regular southern stingray. I'm not a big fan of using the cow nose rays, even though they're so much easier to find this time of year because they're in groups right now of spawning or breeding. So they're super easy to catch versus the southern stingrays. They just like to stay right on the bottom, and they're a little trickier to find now. Not seeing them in the numbers that we used to. You know, and I think part of that is
We were talking about maybe doing a catfish stingray tournament, and my question to Robert was, a lot of people asking us to do that, even though we wouldn't do it with the sharks, but it seems like stingrays are on the decline.
Yeah.
At least in this area, and because the question is, and we're going to call FWC and talk to one of the biologists, obviously you don't want to talk to anybody at the top because they're all brain dead. Possibly, in my opinion, but they do have some great biologists that work for FWC and find out about the stingrays, but I don't want to do a kill tournament with stingrays and catfish if stingrays are in the decline. Now, southern stingrays have about how many babies? 4 to 6?
Yeah, 4 to 6. Some will even give birth up to 10 on a really large southern ray, but 4 to 6 is pretty much average.
So from 4 to 10 babies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the cow nose rays?
One.
So it's...
One baby.
One baby per for one.
And it's very common for it to be in every other year, one baby.
So they give a half a baby a year.
Pretty much.
So that's why Robert feels really guilty taking a cow nose ray for bait, because it's going to be really easy for them to decline to the point in numbers where they're just not here.
Exactly. And because of that, you know, it's like right now they're in their breeding aggregate. So there's schools of 50 to 500 of them in a school, and everyone goes, oh, there's plenty of them. It ain't a big deal. Well,
then they take a bow and arrow out with a line attached to it and shoot them with the bow and arrow.
Right. And then, you know, it's the same thing as white bait. You know, you go out and take white bait. You take a lot, and everyone says there's plenty of them. Now it's every year there's a little less. It's the stingray in no time would be affected a lot.
So in other words, you're feeling guilty and very environmental.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Speaking of neither of those things.
Okay.
Permit. What's going on with the permit?
Permit are starting to show up out there on the nearshore reefs. I've heard of a few down on Helen's Reef, Mary's Reef. The boxcars are starting to get a few. You know, the biggest thing with the permit is that they like to move a lot. So you kind of have to either be lucky to be on that right reef that they show up on, or do a lot of reef hopping going to look for them.
But permit aren't really like on the reef as much as they are over the reef.
Right, they suspend above it. They really, and when we're talking about really reefs, we like, you know, we want the man-made reefs for permit. They, for some reason, are really, really attracted to stuff with very high relief coming off the bottom. A standard ledge of a foot or two is not really attracted.
Or even a rock pile that's only a few feet high.
Yeah.
The taller the structure is, the more likely you are to permit on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so guys are starting to see them and get really excited. I know down there in the Fort Myers area, down to Marco Island, they're catching quite a few. But just in the last several days, we've had a handful of customers talk about seeing them. A couple of guys have caught them, and then we've got some people that are interested in going out and trying to catch them.
Now, how deep of water would you say you're going to start looking? 30, 60?
I'd look for them as shallow as, you know, Novak Reef, which is what, 20, 25?
30, say.
Okay, so yeah, 30 feet.
Give or take a couple of feet, 30.
Yeah.
All right, now, let's say the reef comes up 8, 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
How high above that would the permit be?
There's times where they're actually tailing out there.
So they'll go all the way up to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah, you if you really watch when you're pulling up on the reefs, depending on how calm it is, you always want to really look to that spot that you're heading to, because every now and then you'll see little tiny daggers sticking out of the water, and that's their tails literally
so
just finning.
The best
the
idea at this time of year is if you're going to go to, say, Mary's, shut down an eighth of a mile or a quarter mile away from the reef. When your GPS says you're within a quarter mile of it, stop the boat and then go to dead slow idle and have somebody watching the water to see if those permit are there. Now, you're going to want to take a 7.5, 8 foot normal 10 to 20 spinning rod with you, and I'm going to say like 10-pound braid, something you really cast a long distance.
Right.
And because you're going to want to start, if you're seeing those little fins coming out of the water, you're going to want to free-line baits at them, small crabs, shrimp, something.
Yeah, yeah. The small crab or the shrimp are pretty much the two basic go-tos for them.
Do you think a casting bubble would help?
Absolutely.
So what you're going to do is...
really good, actually.
You're going to put your hook on, put your bait on, but have a casting bubble above that, completely full of water. Don't let any air in your casting bubble, or it's going to act like a bobber. Make sure it's completely full, no bubbles in it. Cast that once you get close. But if you don't, if you run right up on the reef, you've spooked all those permit down. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to set 26 foot of boat, boom, down on top of something and expect it to just be there. Really? Yeah. It's like, that's a one heck of a big rock to throw in the water.
Right.
So you want to shut down a good quarter mile away, idle up to it, watching the water, have your rod rigged with a shrimp or a crab on it. If you have a shrimp, hook it through the tail, as far back to the tail as you can. It's going to cast about 30% further. It's going to be a cast and a half is what you're going to get. When you hook a shrimp through the head, it's going to tumble going through the air. That's not aerodynamic. It really slows it down. You don't get any distance out of it. Hook the shrimp as close to the tail as possible. Usually there's a big knuckle joint right where the flipper joins the body. I try and get just ahead of that. Then have a casting bubble on your leader, and that way you can pitch it way over there. You should be able to get a good 100-foot cast out of it and be able to keep the boat back far enough. And then once it hits the water, don't close the bail up. Make sure you get 10 or 15 feet of line out before you close that bail, because you're going to want this to drift down into the water if you don't get hit right away. And if you cast and it hits the surface and you got the bail closed, it's just going to start coming back at you. You want it to kind of drift down slower, more natural. That little bit extra line in the water is going to pull with the current. So try and do it that way. And for the best results, I'm going to say use 8-pound test mono with a 25 or 30-pound test fluorocarbon leader and your casting bubble on it. You're going to get more fish if you use the mono than if you use braid. Braid's very visible, so you're going to have at least 3.5 feet of leader on there to keep them from shying away from it. And I would use a multicolored braid if you're going to do it there. I don't believe I'd use a single color.
Well, and especially right now, just because the water is as clear as it's going to be, so those fish have really good eyesight, you know, so to fool a permit is a pretty impressive feat. I mean, whether you're using natural bait or artificials, I mean, it's...
What artificials would you use on permit?
Honestly, I'd probably use like a gulp in the crab or a gulp in the shrimp would probably be the two that I could think of, or even the
DOA.
What
about that Weston crab, that little tiny one?
That Weston crab might work pretty well.
It's like the only artificial crab I can think of. Put a little Pro-Cure on it, and that Weston crab, I'm going to guess that would be a permit rocker.
Yeah.
It's the only artificial crab I have any confidence in.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying it.
Yeah.
You know, that would be...
Because I would prefer a Gulf shrimp over a Gulf crab. I don't know why, but I don't have any confidence in the crab. Ton of confidence in the shrimp.
Well, the problem
I would probably use a fish bite shrimp. I'd have one guy throwing the Gulf shrimp, and I have another guy throwing the fish bite shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
See which way they go. And I don't believe... And I would probably just hook them up as if they were live shrimp. I wouldn't put a jig head on them, or a very light jig head.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, like a quarter ounce or eighth ounce jig head on them.
Yeah, I think I'd go up to a quarter, because with the line and everything, it's... But eighth ounce, you're not going to throw it as far, but it's going to sink slower. 16th of an ounce with a casting bubble, and I'd go with that.
That would
16th
work.
Of an ounce with a casting bubble. That'd give you all the distance, but that 16th of an ounce isn't going to fall that fast. More time in the water.
More time in the strike zone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about a bobber stop? If I'm going to throw a live shrimp, can I throw a bobber stop?
You should be able to.
I mean, we know where the reef is, okay? The reef's about 8 feet up. and the permit are going to be, say 12, 15 feet off the bottom. We're in 30 feet. Throw a bobber stop on it 15, 18 feet.
Yeah, that would probably work.
Pitch it out there, and then the bait's only going to go down 15 or 18 feet. The bobber stop would support it right there.
Yeah. No, that would probably work. I've never tried it, so I mean, it works for so many other things.
You know what a bobber stop is, RJ? No. All right. Normally when you put a bobber on, you fix it to the line, and you can really only throw 3, maybe 4 feet of line between your bobber and your hook. Well, they have this little thing. It's a string that basically cinches down to the line. It's a fancy knot. And you put your line into that knot, and you take the little tube that the knot's tied onto off, and then you can cinch that knot down literally anywhere up on your line, from a foot to 200 foot. Doesn't really matter. And so you have your bobber stop, which is a knot or sometimes a little rubber bead, and that will reel right up onto the reel. Comes with the line, goes up on the reel, you can cast it out. But then you have a plastic bead. Now the knot stops the bead. And then you have a bobber that's sliding up and down the line. So the knot stops the bead stops the bobber. Below the bobber you have a little bit of weight, and then your hook. So your whole leader is about 3 foot. You got a swivel, your bobber stop, a little bit of a sinker by the swivel. And so when you cast it out, the line is pulled through the bobber until it hits that stopper. Now, I've used this bobber technique on pinfish out in 60 feet of water grouper fishing. I'll set the bobber stop at 58 feet or 59 feet. And that keeps that pinfish just off the bottom. And he's going to fight like heck to pull that bobber down to get to hide in the rocks. But he's a foot or two away from it, dangling that safe space in front of him. And makes him much more active, much better bait for the grouper. But if he was up by the surface, he's not as good. Down on the bottom, a pinfish wants to hide in the rock or in the weeds. So I literally dangle him just off the bottom, trying to guess a foot, 2 foot off the bottom.
That sounds like a great rig. It's a great idea because you get, like you say, you get all the weight forward when you cast, and then you can get the bait to stay where you want it to stay.
It's a crappie fishing technique.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking as you were saying that, that's what they do with crappie fishing.
Crappie and ice fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, because you set your bobber, you know you've got 6 or 8 feet of Christmas trees piled up off the bottom, and you're sitting up there 25 feet above it. So you set your bobber stop at 20 foot, your minnow's right at 5 foot off the bottom, crappie after crappie. And I just converted that to grouper fishing, or in this case, maybe permit fishing.
Yeah, I'll bet that would work pretty well. That would be fun to try out.
Well, you know, something a little different.
Well, and because we find those permit in more or less shallow water offshore, those places get a lot of pressure, so those fish aren't always going to be right on the surface, so having them down deep would probably make them a little bit more appealing to catch, or possibility of catching.
All right. Speaking of stealing freshwater techniques for saltwater, what's going on in the world of freshwater?
Bass. Bass fishing has been incredible. I mean, it's...
You calling me a bass?
Well, I could add a couple other words, letters
to it.
Yeah,
I know, more choice, but that's all right. So, we're into bass fishing with a capital B. There is... we ordered some of the new Savage Snakes. Got guys asking for those. We got those coming in.
Okay.
I mean, we literally got 6,000 lures for bass.
Yeah.
And, nope, I need this one.
The
amazing thing is a bass will eat anything.
Yeah.
If it shines, if it jiggles, if it makes even the slightest amount of noise, a bass is going to eat it. Yet, we have, like you say, 6,000 different types of bass lures.
Yes.
And we got the ducks. We got the baby duck ones. We've got the lizard ones, the frog ones. Mark Nichols has a great snake, soft plastic snake. Works excellent on bass. But the company came out, it's new, so it's got to be a little better, right?
Yeah, right.
But I guess this is a hard bait snake. It's not. Mark Nichols from DOA has a soft plastic snake, which is, you can use it like a worm, or you can just put a hook in it and reel it across surface like a regular snake. But this one's a hard plastic one. I haven't seen it yet. I called Savage. The guys were in the store. I called them, ordered them up right there. We got the big ones, small ones coming. But bass fishing on as a whole right now, is it still as scattered across the boards, top water spinners, bottom?
Yeah, definitely.
It's some, I mean, just every kind of lure in the world people are buying for bass, and there's not a clear pattern.
No, the only clear thing is shiners. I mean, they're still buying a lot of shiners. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been it. But artificial-wise, they are all over the map. Colors, styles, all of it.
Well, those soft plastic swim baits, if you want to put one of those under a bobber, it, like you normally would a shiner, if you tie your line to the jig head in the front, like say a storm swim shad, put a little bit of scent on the bait, and then we take these little hitchhikers, which is the corkscrew thing you usually use on the front of a worm to put your hook on, and it screws in there, and I kind of open a little bit, and I just stick my line through there back so that it suspends it flat in the water below a bobber. And if there's a little bit of ripples on the water, that can give you that live shiner appearance. Oh, it's got to be a soft bait to do it, because you're going to screw this hitchhiker into the top of the bait so that instead of the lure, when it's hanging below a bobber, just nose up, tail down, it suspends it horizontally, gives it a very nice presentation, which the bass will go after underneath the bobber, because every time the surface ripples, bounces the bobber, which bounces the bait. So we got less than a minute left, Robert.
Okay.
So
go out there and hit all these places with this weather the way it is, with some of the scattered rain that we've been having. There might be a couple of the spill dams running just a little bit, and that little trickle, with as dry as it's been, can really get those bass fired up, and even some of those panfish.
Right, and we're going to get a good amount of rain today and tonight. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of water rushing down those spillways.
So watch for the dams start running. Get your boat over there. If at the top of the dam, there'll be bass. Below the dam will be snook and tarpon. A lot of fun out there. 941-268-6460 is the text number. You can text us questions. We'll try and get them all answered on the next show. Fish and Frank here. Robert in the chair across from me. And the Commander-in-Chief, RJ, in the control center. Bye, boys and girls. See ya. Just to eat.